talk delivered in September 2010 on the occasion of the seminar Murad and Malamita.
Your association with Path. All the papers so far presented covered many of the thoughts which are very seminal to understand the role of a devotee. Every person says he is a devotee. In what way? To what extent? It has been discussed. In my own way, I have written a paper, kindly here. We're all tired by now. The topic chosen for this seminar, Murad and Malamita, essentially relates to types of disciples and devotedness
of the ritual aspirants. It is necessary. It is necessary that we are clear about the thoughts related to devotion and piety before we can understand the concepts of Murad and Malamita. Master commands us to mold our living so as to develop true love and piety in others. Piety is veneration or reverence of the Supreme Being. A bit digression. Many people used to ask me, what do we understand by this word piety in Commandment 9? It invariably relates to veneration or reverence to the Supreme Being. Mold yourself so as to, right? And love of His character, loving obedience to the will of God, and earnest devotion to His service. It can mean also duty, dutifulness, filial reverence and devotion, affectionate reverence and service shown towards parents, relatives, benefactors, country, etc. In a famous dialogue, Euthyphro says, piety is an art of sacrifice and prayer. He puts forward the notion of piety as a form of knowledge of how to do exchange, giving the gods gifts and asking favors of them in turn. This is much similar to many in our society who visit temples, ashrams, gurus, etc. Socrates presses Euthyphro to state what benefit the gods get from the gifts human beings give to them, warning that this knowledge of exchange is a species of commerce. Euthyphro objects that the gifts are not that sort of gift at all, but rather honor, esteem and favor. In other words, as he admits, piety is intimately bound up with what gods like. The discussion comes to a full circle, and yet Socrates faces a preliminary hearing on the charge of impiety, as history records. Such being the problem of understanding piety, we may try to understand the problem of studying the matter in the light of what our beloved master has graced on this subject. He classified the disciples as selfish, fuzzy, ugly, devotee and murad. He details the characters as follows. The same thing, actually I am repeating the same thing as other people have said. Selfish disciples are those who want to gain. I think I'll skip this. Fuzzy types are those who sit for meditation occasionally. Some, however, are such that they start from the very beginning to the condition of devotee. Among these devotees, rarely one is a murad, right? We have heard it again and again repeated, so I'm skipping. Some clarification as to the meaning of these two words, murad and murid, is appropriate at this juncture. The difference between murid and murad. The travelers on the path of love for God are two types. The first is called a murid, seeker, and denotes one whose progress is based on one's own effort and worship. The second is called murad, one who is sought for, and denotes a person whom the God has beloved, himself wishes to draw near him. The difference between Murid and Murad is traditionally understood by comparing the lives of Prophet Moses and Prophet Muhammad. Prophet Moses was a lover of God, while Prophet, in Islamic tradition, was the beloved of God. The ways of love dictate that the lover hopes and desires to meet the beloved. Yet sometimes the beloved also desires that the lover come to meet him. And when the beloved also wishes to meet him, then it becomes easy to draw near to him. When the most beautiful one arranges a meeting, then the true pleasure of love is attained. When the lover knows the beloved loves him well, then his happiness knows no bounds. The love of the lover manifests in deep sights or sighs of longing, whereas the love of the beloved is subtle and hidden. The love of the lover weakens his body, while the love of the beloved invigorates the lover's body. When God Almighty bestows His grace upon a servant, He opens the way to reach him. Then the remembrance of the Almighty predominates. But it should be noted that the Grand Master has made a task easy by granting us the boon of Pranahuti, which makes us feel the love of Master in every session of Pranahuti and enables us to feel the center yawning towards the circumference. This unique feature of the system of our beloved Master makes almost every one of us a murad. The oozing of the grace of the Master is something that we experience every day. God has become easier to be reached because He blesses us with His embrace that is hard to express. However, trying to fix persons according to some qualities has never been easy. Trying to classify people according to sattvic, rajasic and tamasic types has never been accepted by all. As to the correctness of classifying, one as belonging to this category or the other has also been not easy, notwithstanding Bhagavan Sri Krishna being so very vociferous in his song Celestial. We have on an earlier occasion discussed about the nature of devotees according to their feelings, the 9 rasas like Shanta, Hasya, Vatsalya, Adbhuta, Shoka, Krodha, Sringara, Viraha and Vismaya. Lord Krishna also gave another classification based on the pravrittis or the nature of the person as Daivi and Asuri. Grandmaster states that in addition, due to insufficient knowledge of Dharma, every person has some supposedly good or bad fixed ideas and he is determined not to listen or accept from books any other than his ideas. Supposing that he listens or sees them, he will never accept. Therefore, there is no other way than to place before everybody a list of beliefs or faiths and to try to make them understand to the extent possible. Afterwards, whoever is having the divine grace will be granted his guidance. After making the above statements, the Grand Master classifies the devotees as persons having ikhlas, that is, they who have a pure intention without any fluctuating temperament, and do dayami tavazza, that is, those remembering him again and having intimacy with him, is called the dayami tavazza. It appears that the masters of the Grand Master affirmed that there is no other intimacy and attention than this is needed in spirituality. We can better comprehend the importance of the method of constant remembrance of our system. Revered Lalaji continues to state that it was the principle of elders and people of olden days to develop first faith, purify mind and gain stages, because according to their mind, their only desire was to get nearer Paramatma. As long as the mind is not cleaned and purified, these curtains will not go away. For the same reason, by cleaning of mind, their faith becomes strong and they make their faith so strong that they do not have anything except that of Paramatma. And whatever powers and attainments they had, they think to have come from Paramatma and they belong to him. The origins of the method of cleaning given to us by the Master can be appreciated. Vilayatavala is the first order of saintliness, which means that the devotees have intimacy and nearness with Paramatma and nothing else. such a yogi as Kavarik and Dasarath. Kavarik are called so as they are capable of miracles. Dasarath is having access to somebody's Atma, putting their thoughts putting the thoughts in other person, influencing the other person, etc. Perhaps this is what is now taught to us as pranahuti. This type of aspirant is having the influence of vilayatavar. It means that he may not help worldly people, and his attention and thought is always towards Paramatma. Their attention towards worldly people is either less or nil. Vilayat doyam is the second order saintliness, which means that along with the attachment to Paramatma, nearness is also with the world, and such a yogi is accepted by people and they are his followers. His relation is with the entire universe. The influence of Vilaya Doyam is such that this type of Mahatma's attention, though he is with Paramatma, their relation is more with worldly people. They have the orders that their thoughts should be with worldly people in spite of their being with God, so that they can help worldly people. The trainers of Vajrasas do have such a condition, and it is their duty to live up to the expectations of their condition. Grandmaster states that man's essential duty is realization of Maitri and love. Though this is so, man brought with him from birth qualities like Tam, Rajas and Tam and Sat. The things in the making of human body are natural. Man can neither live without them nor can he escape from their influence. The condition of Sachidananda also is in the man. Some time or the other he will be in that ocean of bliss without fail. But he is now under the illusion of thinking that the artificial or temporary worldly bliss to be good fortune, and is immersed in it. Some time or other he will come out of it. When the time of consciousness leaving the jiva comes, the divine feelings and love which are there in him are awakened, and love and devotion develop in him. The effect of this is that the person forgets everybody except oneself. He states that there are seven layers of man's individuality, soul, heart and head, etc. When the first layer is achieved, the remaining layers are also achieved by themselves one by one. That is why the knowledge of intermediary steps is hidden from the common man. He cannot have the discriminatory knowledge of them. But real man or Purna Yogya has the elaborate knowledge of the difference between the steps. Ordinary common man cannot have the knowledge of them. According to him, common man includes Pandit, Maulvi and some apparently learned people. This knowledge is only related to the Abhyasis. Grand Master classifies devotion of God according to the stages. Aya, Darabit, Sufiya, Malamita. Again, I skip these three paragraphs. Malamita category. In spite of being complete jnani, do not think or act against nature. They always have the disposition of a devotee or serf. A few of the Malamita category are considered tuch, as they like to exhibit themselves in such a way which is normally objectionable to the common people, and in fact that may not be against the law of dharma internally, and people may not be able to understand its subtlety. For example, talking incoherently, shouting like a madman, or doing several things which make people think that they are tuch. Such people hold the entire creation in high esteem. Whatever they exhibit is all artificial. Will is both a verb and a noun. As a verb, it means to choose between two things, to desire. As a noun, it means the mental power by which a person can direct his or her thoughts and actions. Will has been defined by those living a spiritual life as overcoming carnal desires, resisting animal appetites, and always preferring in complete submission to his will, God's wish and pleasure over one's own. A willing disciple, Murad, never relies on his or her own power and is absolutely submitted to the will of the All-Powerful, who holds all creation in his grasp. As for the one-willed Murad, he or she overflows with the love of God and never considers or aspires to anything other than obtaining his pleasure. Such person becomes a favorite of God. The aspirants in our system who offer the prayer do so not for any material gain, but desire total emergence in the Master. Their desire will only to gain his favor. Will is the first station on the path of God and the first harbor, prayer, from which one sets sail for eternity. Almost everyone sets sail for the infinite, first comes to this harbor, from where an impetus to reach the ultimate destination is gained. Journeying towards this destination is proportional to the traveler's purity of intention, the degree and quality of his or her relationship with the world and material things, and the power of the driving force derived from this harbor, prayer, and from the inner desire to undertake this voyage. In proportion to the help of God and the strength of the disciple's willpower, some traverse the distance between the harbor and the destination at walking speed, others at the speed of a spaceship or light, and still others at the speed that cannot be measured. The spiritual growth of the masters is to be taken as examples of what can be achieved by the will, the willing one, and the willed one when supported by the help of the master. There is a derivative relationship between will and the willing one. Material or natural causes are wheels between the superficial views and divine grandeur and dignity, such that who cannot understand the reality behind things and events should not blame God for what appears to them as disagreeable. Similarly, a person's willpower is only a shadow of one, of the one who does whatever he wills in whatever way he wills. Just as shadow is dependent on the original, any will created is dependent on the creator. The deeper implication of the center yawning towards the circumference can be appreciated if this is understood. Until the traveler perceives that one's personal will is a dim reflection of the absolute will of the all-willing one, and advances or rises as high as the station of being the one willed or desired, a disciple will always regard his or her will as having a separate, independent existence. Indeed, a traveler is willing, murid, at the beginning of the way, and willed, murad, at the end of it. Murid is one willing while searching the ways to be loved, desired, and murad or willed when seeing an imprint of him on everything and weaving a lace work of spiritual pleasure with the threads of knowledge and love of God. One important source from which willpower is fed is a traveler's care and sensitivity in fulfilling his or her responsibilities and constant supplication to God. Moreover, it depends upon the traveler's perseverance in extra acts or duties of worship so that God may become his or her eyes with which to see, ears with which to hear, and hands with which to grasp. Eternity, in addition to meaning eternal life in the hereafter, is also used to describe the expansion of feelings, emotions, and reflections that one feels inwardly. An individual has infinite eternal desires and ambitions, and he or she can experience in his or her heart eternal pleasures of paradise and of being loved by God and loving him. To them, the only utility of God is when they are in distress or misery. They expect him on such occasions to attend to their call to remove their troubles. They pray to him chiefly for the supply of their wants. It is really far from the idea of true love and devotion. A true devotee is one who loves him not for any favor or worldly interest, but merely for love's sake. He always remains in a state of complete resignation to his will. He is perfectly contented with all that is bestowed upon him, whether good or bad, joyful or unpleasant. Joy or sorrow is meaningless to him. Everything is a boon to him from the beloved. Such complete resignation and unquestioning attitude in all matters is the highest form of devotion. There is yet another classification of disciples according to our Master Babuji Maharaj, as he explicitly graced us in this subject. It is not intended to comment on the same. He stated that the sages have classified the disciples under two main heads, the Manmata and the Gurumata. The former are those who approach the goal, who approach the Guru with some particular worldly view, end in view, such as relief from worldly misery, desire or for wealth. They submit to him only so long as they are hopeful in the achievement of their desires. When they meet disappointment in this respect, they are off. For such disciples, the question of obedience or submission even does not arise. What to say of surrender? Gurumata disciples are those who obey the commands of the Master in all matters and try to submit to his will in all possible ways. Submission begins with obedience. When we are deeply impressed by the great powers of the Master, of higher attainments in spirituality, we feel inwardly inclined to follow his biddings. But often the effect remains upon us only when we are in his presence, and when we are away, we become unmindful of him. Repeated association with him for some time brings us in close touch with the great soul, and his supreme supremacy begins to be established in our heart. We accept him as our guide in all matters pertaining to spiritual advancement. The result is that we remember him frequently. When we are perfectly convinced of his superior capabilities, only then our submission in true sense begins. We go on with it and practice as we are directed. We think of pleasing him by our actions. The idea of right or wrong too begins to assume prominence in our heart, and we feel inclined to refrain from evil. We consequently adopt the line of virtue so that we might be able to please our great Master. It is our primary motive, for we wish to be saved from the miseries of the next life. But so far, we reserve to ourselves the right of discretion and are therefore responsible for all our actions, whether good or bad. At a higher stage of self-surrender, such a discretionary power becomes almost extinct, and a man does everything thinking it to be his Master's will. The question of right or wrong does not at all arise in his mind, or it becomes absolutely certain that by following his Master's will, he is doing the only right thing, and he does nothing but the right, feeling it to be his Master's will. We thus see that the Master exquisitely weaving the concepts of murid and murad in a practical manner, and have given us the necessary guidelines for action. Thus we find the revered Lalaji Maharaj explaining the states and levels of spiritual growth of the saliks in the path, and our beloved Master distinguishing devotees based on the goals they have enjoining in the spiritual path. Times have changed enormously, and today we are having amongst us all types of devotees mentioned by the Master. The humble effort of ISRC and Imperians is to make the devotees properly oriented to the goal of human life and strive to become murads and malamitas. Pranam.